What's up, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Mr. Movie. I'm your host, as always, Josh Bergman, and today I would love to welcome back my co-host, Jeff Bergman. Jeff, it's been 4 weeks since you've been on the show. How have you been?
Been good, Mr. Movie. Been anxious to come back.
Of course, I'm so excited to have you on, because today we are going to be talking about the long-awaited Zack Snyder's Justice League, as well as ranking our top 7 3-hour-plus long films. But before we do that, Dad...
Why is that? Why 3 hours?
Why 3 hours? Because, you know, 2 hours, there's a good chunk of films that are 2 hours. And like 2 hour 45, that's just like, that's being too specific. But 3 hours, that's a rarity. And Zack Snyder's Justice League was greater than 3 hours, but not just three. It was more than 4 hours long, which we'll get into later. But before we do that, Dad, it's been 4 weeks. So, of course, some news has happened in the world. For the last 6+ months now, we've been talking about award season, and one award show that we talked about on the last time you were on, the Golden Globes. We're not going to go so much into who won every category, but some things to note. Nomadland won Best Drama over Trial of the Chicago 7. I know you have some opinions. We don't have to talk about that now. But for Best Musical Comedy, Borat's subsequent movie film won, which was Sacha Baron Cohen's second win for the night. It won over The Prom. It won over Palm Springs. How do you feel about Borat taking the award for that?
Well, I feel that the movie in totality was very, what they did and then what they accomplished in the movie was pretty amazing. Was it the best musical comedy movie of the year? No, I don't think so.
Interesting. Because you did pick The Prom.
I like The Prom. I also like Palm Springs. So one of the two would have been fine with me. But I just think, you know, sometimes with Borat, you know, the joke gets, I remember when we watched it, the joke gets old very fast. So,
yes.
You know.
And, you know, for acting, it was more of the same. You had Chadwick Boseman win Best Actor in a Drama. You had Rosamund Pike won Best Actress in a Musical or Comedy, which, don't get me started on that one. But I think the biggest surprise of the evening was that Andra Day for the United States versus Billie Holiday won Best Actress in a Drama. This is over Frances McDormand, Carey Mulligan. Andra Day won. Was it nice to see her be so excited with her entire family? It was. Do I think it was worth it? No. What's your opinion on that?
Well, at the time I was watching the show, we hadn't seen the movie, and then we saw the movie afterwards, and yes, her performance was, I thought, extraordinary.
Oh.
So I thought it was like a really intense performance. And they all were. I mean, I think this is the strongest category, no question.
100%.
I haven't seen Pieces of a Woman and Vanessa Kirby, but all four of the, you know, Viola Davis, Andra Day, Frances McDormand, Carey Mulligan. I even think McDormand's performance doesn't deserve to win. I mean, I think they're all good. They're all strong.
I mean, personally, as I was kind of hinting at, we watched Billie Holiday after the Golden Globe win, and I'm like, oh, is she actually that good? Personally, I didn't think so. Not enough to win over everyone. But I think this does translate into the Oscar nominations, because the Oscar nominations have come out, and I know we want to do a full-on Oscars episode where we're going to do predictions and all that stuff. So just some things to highlight. First off, for Best Director, we've been hyping Trial of Chicago 7 for many months at this point. Aaron Sorkin was surprisingly not nominated for Best Director. Instead, it was Lee Isaac Chung for Minari, Emerald Fennell for Promising Young Woman, David Fincher for Mank, Chloe Zhao for Nomadland, and the surprise of the evening was Thomas Vinterberg for Another Round, a film that we have not watched yet. Jeremy and I do want to watch the film, and it is Mads Mikkelsen's foreign film that's been nominated for Best Foreign Language Film. How do you feel about Aaron Sorkin not getting nominated? He got nominated for Best Screenplay.
Yeah.
If it makes up for that, which I think is 100% deserving.
I guess like a lot of the movie people don't think he's like a real director, you know?
Yeah.
He's not at that level yet.
And another one that kind of relates back to the Golden Globes is that for Best Actress, the main four, Viola Davis, Vanessa Kirby, Frances McDormand, and Carey Mulligan, everyone said these four are definitely going to get nominated. Who will be the fifth? And surprisingly enough, Andra Day was nominated for the United States versus Billie Holiday. So you think that was worth the fifth nomination.
Well, who got snubbed, would you say?
I mean, if I were choosing Elizabeth Moss for The Invisible Man, but there was potentially Amy Adams for Hillbilly Elegy, which I haven't seen.
You're
I've heard
right.
great things. You know, I can't really think right now. But still, out of everything, I still would not choose Andra Day for Billie Holiday.
You really didn't like that performance, I see.
it was more mainly the movie, and it felt like a Jared Leto for The Little Things, which was not nominated, thankfully, for supporting actor, but how everyone said he's the best out of a mediocre movie. I felt like she is the best in a below-average movie. But that's just me. And for me, what I find the biggest surprise of all of the nominations was for Best Supporting Actor. We had Sacha Baron Cohen for Charles Chicago 7, expected. Daniel Kaluuya for Judas and the Black Messiah, who's been winning, expected. Leslie Odom Jr. for One Night in Miami. Paul Raci, surprisingly, for Sound of Metal. But the most surprising part is Lakeith Stanfield for Judas and the Black Messiah, which puts both Daniel Kaluuya and Lakeith Stanfield as supporting actors, when personally, I think Lakeith is the main actor. And it's weird though, because Warner Brothers, I looked this up, campaigned Lakeith as best actor. So that means that enough people in the Oscars intentionally voted him in supporting actor, whether it was because of a mistake, whether it's because they knew Chadwick Boseman was gonna win best actor and they're like, we want to show him some support, let's put him here. Very weird that that happened.
I find it strange. True, he was the lead actor. The story was really about him. Everybody else was sort of a side character.
I've never really seen that happen before. And as a fan of the film, as a fan of Lakeith, I'm thrilled that he got nominated. I just don't think he should have been nominated for that specific category. But, you know, weird Academy Awards choices and decisions, stuff that are out of our hands.
I just don't understand the whole voting process when it comes. Like, you know, I would think that, you know, I don't know who determines, like, in a movie, who's going to be the actor, who's going to be the supporting. Like,
I think
is it the producer? Like, the producers, and they submit their names into the Academy?
It's like Warner Brothers or A24. Oh. They send out a list and form of, you know, best actor, and they may have like five main actors and you could choose which ones, right? But I saw on the Warner Brothers four-year consideration, Lakeith Stanfield is best actor, and somehow he got best supporting actor.
Very odd.
And then the big,
well, you know, that's why they need to like make this transparent. We should know, like, okay, like the accounting firm should say, all right, these are the five nominees, and then these are the next five who just didn't make it. Like the
Ooh,
way
but
we
wouldn't
do
that
it?
Make you feel bad? Like,
no, but like at least you
I
know.
Just missed it by one.
I think it'd be fun.
And then the big, of course, who gets nominated for Best Picture. Out of 10 possibilities, we have 8 films nominated for Best Picture. We have The Father, Judas and the Black Messiah, Mank, Minari, Nomadland, Promising Young Woman, Sound of Metal, and The Trial of Chicago 7. I think the biggest, whoa, well, those got snubbed, were One Night in Miami and Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. Both of those were not nominated. Now, is it because they're play-based? That is a possibility, except The Father, which is a play, which we now have seen. That was a play, and it did get nominated. But it's definitely interesting that those two, Ma Rainey, I understand, but I really thought One Night in Miami was going to get nominated.
Yeah, I don't know why if the movie people are going to put minorities in other categories, why those two movies? I mean, those two movies were flawed. One Night in Miami it dragged out a little bit. It was slow, you know, it was a play in a movie. And so was Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. Again, it was a play, it wasn't a movie. You know, so I could see why they didn't make it. So maybe one of the two would have been nice, but I guess it didn't rank.
And now we have 6 weeks to discuss these films before the Oscars. It feels longer than usual. Six weeks is the end of April.
You know, the Oscar nominations last year, I think they came out January, and then the awards are like February 25th.
Well, last year they came out, the Oscars were earlier, so usually they're 4 weeks apart,
yeah,
the nominations and awards, but this is 6 weeks, and it kind of sucks because we've now seen everything except another round, which isn't even the highest, right, of like, oh, you have to watch this.
Well, you know, we really should. We should see all the foreign films. Now that we have all this time, we should really see all the foreign films.
And Dad, moving on from the Oscars, movie theaters are opening back up, have opened back up in New York. They have opened back up in Los Angeles, thankfully, after a year. And because of that, movies are shifting their release dates, which means it is the latest episode of The Schedule Shuffle. Do the shuffle. Do the shuffle. I bet it's been a while since you heard that one. But Dad, some major shuffling has gone around, especially in the 4 weeks that you've been gone. So to go back a couple weeks, to start off everything, Universal had some shuffling to do. Fast and Furious 9, or F9, or as I like to say, F9, which was slated for Memorial Day 2021, it has been postponed again to June 2021, just a month. The end of June, you know, out of everything that's happened, that's not the worst, especially since vaccines are now being rolled out. Theaters are now opening, but Europe, which is Fast and Furious' like biggest market, or just international, they might have some cases coming up, so I understand that they want to delay just a little bit. But the bigger surprise is Minions: The Rise of Gru, which was Independence Day 2020, was pushed to Independence Day 2021, has been pushed again to Independence Day 2022. They're saying screw it, a whole nother year for Minions that it's delayed till. I think that's a big stretch.
That doesn't make any sense.
I think they really want the Independence Day holiday. And even though animated films, kid films, have been doing the best during COVID, for some reason, they don't think it's going to be big enough. So that was a big surprise. But in other news, because of Fast and Furious moving to the end of June, Venom: Let There Be Carnage, which was slated for that day, has been pushed to September 2021.
Tom Hardy.
The Tom Hardy, Michelle Williams, Woody Harrelson. That's in September 2021. But the best news out of all, A Quiet Place Part 2. Let me say again, this was delayed a week before the release when the pandemic started, was delayed till April 2021, and then a couple months ago to September 2021. But because Fast and Furious moved off the Memorial Day slot, guess what moved in? Moving up 4 months to Memorial Day weekend, A Quiet Place Part 2, and I think this is it. I think they're releasing it. They have a new agreement with Paramount Plus where after 45 days, the movie after theaters will be on the service for free. I am pumped. I'm thrilled about that.
Congratulations to you.
I've worked so hard for this. I've waited. But anyway, let's get to the big how did this happen of the week. Disney, as you probably saw, released a bunch of schedule shifts in which I thought this was going to be it, but Black Widow has once again been delayed. It was originally the May 7th opening of summer slot, has been delayed to July 9th in theaters as well as Disney Plus for premiere access, $30. And because of this, Shang-Chi, the new Marvel character, which was originally going to be in July, that weekend that Black Widow is now in, It's been delayed to Labor Day weekend for theaters as well as Disney Plus for $30. How do you feel?
Labor Day's never really been a big movie weekend.
I know, but
maybe they're thinking Labor Day, they're going to remake Labor Day as being a movie weekend. I don't know.
2020, 2021, there are no rules for movie going anymore. But also, Cruella, the Emma Stone film that honestly I think looks a bit interesting where, whoa, this could actually be at least visually cool. It will still stay on its Memorial Day release date, but in theaters as well as Disney Plus for the $30 charge. How do you feel about those three?
Well, I think that is the formula. I think that.
But do you think it needs to be Black Widow needs to be delayed for theaters as well as Disney Plus? Because Disney just did it with Raya and the Last Dragon a couple weeks ago, and yes, the box office out of 3 weeks is not the best, but the legs and zero competition for, I think, June. There's no competition for family films that it will have extremely long legs. That The Croods, A New Age, has definitely showed us that animated films, families will go out to the cinema to just get their kids out. So it shows that these types of films can work in theaters, and we're in a weird position right now, but I don't think it needed to be delayed. If you want in theaters as well as Disney Plus for $30, keep May 7th, unless it's an international reason.
Yeah, it's got to be an international reason, because it seems like the United States, well, is it California now, is April 15th, anybody in California can get a shot. I think we're going to be fully vaccinated, I would think. A large percentage of the population will be vaccinated by May.
Weren't we told Independence Day was like everyone will get vaccinated? Right. So, I mean, that's after Independence Day, so Disney might have their wish.
Yeah.
But it'll also be interesting because, as I said with Ryan the Last Dragon on my episode with Cam, is that certain chains like Cinemark, which is the third biggest chain, they would not play Raya because Disney was asking for too much money. So it'll be interesting if Disney amends their rules for Black Widow, or Cinemark will either have to play into Disney and say, fine, we'll play because it's Black Widow, or they will say, no, we have enough films, we don't need this, and Disney will lose money.
It's an interesting business dilemma going forward with these movie theaters. I wasn't sure how it worked before. It seemed like all these theaters could get whatever movies they put out. But now there's like a negotiation. Very weird.
But the biggest, I'm shocked, heartbroken, and honestly furious about this, Disney Pixar's Luca, which is a lovely summer film, it looks like, with a bunch of kid leads, that was slated for June 18th, Father's Day weekend, is going to Disney Plus for free and is no longer in theaters. I know we try to keep this a family-friendly podcast, but I just have to say, what the fuck is Disney doing sending Soul, which I understand, it was Christmas, the holidays, give them something, they've been sitting on this movie. This we're showing that people are going back to the theaters. Theaters are opening up. There is a place here, and it's Pixar. They invested a lot of money. I know Disney Plus wants original content, but a Disney Pixar film that looks like the ideal summer movie that kids can go to for the entire summer, why send it to Disney Plus? The filmmakers didn't want this. The actors didn't want this. The animators didn't want this. I just don't understand why they do this. This actually makes me mad.
Maybe it's not a good movie. I don't know.
It's Pixar! There's only like three mishaps.
Well, I know the question would be though, when are they going to change the Oscar rules that a movie has to be in a movie theater to be considered for the Oscars? When are they going to cut that? When are they going to stop that?
I don't know.
Because if Luca doesn't go in the theaters and they change the rule, then it's not eligible for Best Animated Feature.
And it's Pixar. It probably would have won. But anyway, to move on to that in my rant, Fox, the 20th Century portion of Disney, some changes. Free Guy, the Ryan Reynolds film, which was slated for Memorial Day, the weekend before, delayed to August 13th. And then because of that, The Kingsman, which was slated for August, has been once again delayed to December 2021.
I'm so bummed.
It was originally February 2020, and that film cannot catch a break. And then also Death on the Nile, which was going to be in September 2021, has been delayed till February 2022. Now, if you remember, we've been talking about this for a while, and you don't seem excited for it, but Armie Hammer is in the film. And if they release it in September or December, wouldn't have made much, but there would have been the "is Armie Hammer a cannibal" conversation that might get some backlash when the film comes out.
I don't know. It's poison to me.
It's just...
You might as well just release it in January with the rest of the drac.
But anyway, that is the latest on the schedule shuffle. Woo! At least we have a quiet place.
This is what happens when we don't do a podcast
more often. There's just so much news. But anyway, let's move on to the film of the week. Zack Snyder's Justice League. So pretty much this film, which is streaming on HBO Max, is, if you're asking, wait, Josh, is this a new Justice League? How is this different from the 2017 version? Let me tell you that at its core, if you say Batman's getting a team together to fight this alien Steppenwolf and try to save the day, it is the same movie. But on the inside, it is a lot more different. And I feel like I just have to explain a brief history, because I feel like it's not just a weird situation. This is probably a once-in-a-lifetime film experience that we've lived through for the last 3 years, in which I try to do this as quickly as possible, as easy as possible, but accurately. And Dad, if you have any questions or any comments, interrupt me and let me know. So as we know, Zack Snyder was hired for the Man of Steel Superman movie in 2013, the first film to kick off the DC Cinematic Universe, rivaling Marvel in a way. The next film after that was 3 years later, Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice. Now when that film came out, it did not get good reviews at all. People said that the story is convoluted, confusing, muddled. It is a very dark and depressing movie, and financially didn't make as much as Warner Brothers wanted. So because of that, Warner Brothers was very scared because Justice League was only 2 to 3 weeks away from filming to reach a November 2017 deadline. So they said, Zack, try to do these small changes. And Zack's like, sure, I'll make some notes or whatever. Now, he then filmed Justice League with his notes as well as the studio's notes over the summer of 2016. Also in this time, Zack Snyder released Batman v Superman, the extended cut, which is his definitive version, which has 30 more minutes, which was much better received, and said this should have been the movie that was released in theaters. But Warner Brothers, of course, didn't, because 3 hours is long. So he filmed the film over the summer of 2016 and then was editing it until March of 2017, when Sally's daughter, Autumn Snyder, did pass away, committed suicide. And then the big question is, oh no, this is March. The film's coming out in November 2017. What's going to happen? And sadly, Zack Snyder, for the better reasons, stepped away from the film, said, I can't do this. I have to be here with my family. This was in May, 6 months before the film was going to be released. Now, this time, Warner Brothers said, we are bringing in Joss Whedon to do some minor script improvements, some minor reshoots to fix the film in some way, which, if you remember, Joss Whedon made the first two Avengers, Marvel. Perfect idea. And then over the summer of 2017, 3 months before the film was coming out, they did reshoots. People said it wouldn't be that much. Henry Cavill was brought back with a mustache, and then they had to CGI the mustache out. And then also the composer of the film, Junkie XL, who worked on Batman v Superman, who did do this film, was fired, and Danny Elfman was hired with less than 5 months till the release. So the movie came out, Justice League, in 2017 November, and people actually liked it more than the other films. They thought it was lighthearted, and they can tell some visuals were off. But that weekend, I remember, there were about 2 minutes of leaked scenes from Justice League, including clips of Cyborg, Superman, and Flash saving Iris West from the car, which is featured in this version. And people were like, whoa, what is this? Is there a whole different version? And then if you look back to the trailers before Zack Snyder left, you can tell this is a different movie. And then over the course of 2018, Zack Snyder is posting stuff on social media, posting stills of his version and like how different it is. And then eventually in the summer of 2020, 3 years after campaigning, Zack Snyder announced that he will be releasing his version of Justice League on HBO Max in 2021. And now we now have Zack Snyder's Justice League in 2021, a film that many people said didn't exist, a film that many people fought for, donated a lot of money to the AFSP, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. There have been so much promotion and hype around this, and that was a long tirade. I'm sorry if you got lost or bored, but I feel like it's very important to know that
you have to know the history.
This film is dedicated, is made, honored for Zack Snyder's daughter. He said that, in a way, none of his kids really care that much about these type of Greek mythology movies, except for my daughter, Autumn. It was a very sad, but very, you know, now 4 years later, a very uplifting moment. And in a weird way, an emotional conclusion for Zack and Deborah Snyder, who he directed and both of them produced. So overall, after all that, what'd you think of Zack Snyder's 4-hour Justice League film?
Well, you know, it is, you know, the issue with all the Zack Snyder DC movies is that they are darkish and they look sort of like 300, which he also did. So it has that sort of feel to it. So, you know, the question is, what do you prefer? Do you prefer the Marvel look, which is a very bright, colorful, I feel, look, and more, a little more lighthearted, especially over time? And then versus this, which is more intense, more of like a dark comic, a Dark Knight comic type of a feel. So there were certain aspects of the story that I'm glad I saw that they worked on that I really liked. Like, I felt like they fleshed out all the members of the Justice League a little bit more. You got more of a story of definitely Cyborg.
Cyborg 100%.
So I like that. I like the Flash got a little more scenes with the Flash, though I feel like his character was sort of went back and forth between comic, you know, just being there for comic relief and actually having like a real purpose, I feel. And I realize they are doing a Flash movie.
They, after many delays, it was supposed to be, the original DC plan was 2018 for the Flash movie. Yeah. But now they're finally doing it. They, I think for November 2022, they're like a couple weeks away from starting a film.
Yeah, they just recasted Billy Crudup's role as his father.
Sadly. But Iris West, who is in this film, Kiersey Clemons, she's apparently going to be back.
Very nice. So the problem is the whole theme of the movie, the storyline with Steppen, like, I just feel like the villain, you know, when you have villains that are outer space people, I don't know, that you have no back history on. Like, by the time you got to Avengers Infinity War, you kind of knew a little about Thanos and what his deal is, and, you know, he's a little more interesting. But this villain just came out of nowhere. He hasn't been in any of the other DC movies.
Correct.
Just maybe a little glimpse of it in
Batman v Superman. In the extended cut, in a deleted scene, which I showed you, and you're like, why was this not in the movie?
Because then it would have made sense. But, you know, so that whole part of it, just, you know, the villain itself, he's just a dark, evil person.
He has a better motive, though, in this version. He's like, I think, like, he's banished, and Darkseid, who is the Thanos, pretty much says, you cannot come back home until you conquer, like, 100,000 planets.
Right.
And so he's trying to do this, and then he realized Earth is just more than another planet. So, like, he has more of a story.
Yeah.
It also is
but a it's not weird. An interest. I don't know. I just feel like those characters are just not interesting to me. They're not, maybe because they're all computer animated. I mean, if there were real actors acting in them, maybe I would feel I'd really like them. So the general part of the movie is that whole thing. And because of that, you know, I don't like love the movie. And the whole premise of, you know, back in the day that they had been, Steppenwolf had been banished because all of the people got together to beat them. I thought that was sort of going to come back because, like, I felt like the Amazonians were attacked, but then they weren't involved in the rest of the movie.
Well, it wasn't their story.
I know.
Well, I'm just saying, if you want to see more of the Amazonians getting attacked, that's for potential sequels that at this point will not happen.
Right.
But could.
Yeah, so I felt like there was some like storylines that just kind of like just went off the deep end and never got tied up for my sake. You know, I would have really liked to have seen the Amazons get a little, you know, revenge, or the people, or the Atlanteans as well, you know, get together at the end. I thought, you know, the defeat of Steppenwolf, I thought was just okay.
Well, I think it was okay. So the main thing of how is this film on its own, and then how is it compared to what Warner Brothers then put extra money towards to try to fix this version.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember the 2017 version, they destroy the mother. Spoilers for a movie, but at its core, it's the same thing. They destroy the mother boxes, and then the parademons take Steppenwolf back because of fear, because right. They smell fear, which I think it's dumb.
Yeah.
In this one, I think his end is cooler.
Oh, yeah, his end is cooler.
Is better, and like that's the thing. Like on its own, the movie, it definitely has issues. Length is definitely one that we'll get into. Certain storylines with an additional character that I don't really know that much about this person particularly is not really needed or resolved for this. But compared to the 2017 theatrical, I think it is miles better. There are some elements I actually do like in the 2017, just like single lines of dialogue or even some small scenes. But just overall, I think much, much more improvement and at least consistent for Zack Snyder's vision.
Yeah, I think 2017, I think they tried to add a little more humor into it, I thought, than what ended up being here. This was a little more, but it like fleshed out a lot of the stories, especially with Aquaman 2. You know, it led into the Aquaman movie, I thought, more.
Yeah,
like you really understood the Aquaman movie more based on, you know, seeing this.
Because Willem Dafoe is in this one, who was in Aquaman, but
right.
He wasn't even in at all the 2017 version. Mera, Amber Heard, is in this film a bit more. She has a British accent. Did you notice that, like, she had a British accent in this one, and in no other version she has one?
No, I didn't notice
that. I just think it's a bit weird.
That is weird.
But as you mentioned before, Cyborg, Ray Fisher, who sadly has not done that much after this, I think Zack Snyder says he's the heart and soul of this movie. I think he was great. Like, I love that character, that story. I loved fleshing him out and his struggle with his dad. I really like that.
Yeah, because Cyborg was not in the original Justice League. It was not like he was just like a fifth wheel, but he really knew nothing about him or what his abilities were or anything like that and why, you know. So I really felt like he really got a good fleshing out the story was.
And then Flash, as you were kind of saying, there's some times where he's important, especially with a much better ending for him compared to just saving a Russian family.
That was confusing. That was, right.
But like this, he actually has importance. I don't think it was that confusing. It was my favorite part of the film, the ending part. I don't want to spoil so much, but there were some jokes, because he is the quippy, or at least the comic relief, where I was like, this is a bit not funny for me. There are some lines, like some awkward dialogue, some not funny bits, but there was one part with Flash, as I was mentioning before, Kiersey Clemons, Iris West's character, is one scene in the film who's his love interest in the overall story. Did you like that scene? Did you think it needed to be in the scene, in the movie?
That's a good question.
I don't think it needed to be in the movie.
No, I mean, I think, it was the first scene, it was the only scene where you saw what his abilities were.
Before he gets introduced,
right?
To
like
Batman.
in the first Justice League, did he have a scene?
His one scene was when he's checking in to prison to see his father, and like some guy is like, "Can you
hurry
up?" And he draws a face.
Yeah,
which isn't a horrible scene, but is not the best.
Yeah,
I personally didn't think it needed to be, but if you're introducing Kiersey Clemons here, sure, bring it on. And then Batman. I like him. He feels like a beat. Like he has a whole thing with Alfred saying like, it's all about faith now, Alfred. And like that, like made me feel warm inside.
You know, it's so sad because you did get a lot of Alfred. I thought Jeremy Irons.
Great. I loved all of his additions.
You know, and you got a little bit more of Batman's motivation after the last movie that he felt obligated Superman to do this, that type of thing. I feel bad that I like Ben Affleck as Batman. I think I'm sad that he won't be doing Batman anymore.
He's apparently in The Flash.
Oh.
For like one last ride.
Oh, okay. Because you'll talk about the future, but you know, I don't think the future includes Ben Affleck.
And one of the bigger additions to this film is the inclusion of Darkseid, which is the bigger bad to Steppenwolf. What do you think of Darkseid as a presence of like, I want to see more of him? Did you, in potential futures, would you be like, yes, let's bring this guy in? Because it leads off for Darkseid's coming.
Yeah, But I couldn't figure out who Darkseid was and who the... There was a third guy.
Yeah, they don't explain that much in the movie, but it's Desaad. It is pretty much the receptionist to Darkseid.
All right, so it confused me there. But yes, the movie ends with basically a plan for the future. I actually thought that was going to be the last half hour of the movie. Like, I thought there was going to be another half hour where he actually comes.
No.
But...
Because all of this stuff, except for an epilogue scene with Jared Leto that a lot of people know about, all of this stuff was filmed 5 years ago. And this film's 4 hours. The original one was 2 hours with an hour of Joss Whedon footage. So I don't understand why Warner Brothers, like for timing maybe, or for storylines, but like they wasted a lot of money trying to fix this movie and then refix their mistakes.
Yeah, well, I get it, but maybe they'll make, you know, this will help the, I don't know if it helped the HBO Max subscription rate.
It actually, to go into some numbers, I don't really know who does these numbers or stuff or how it's calculated, but they say that 1.8 million households, aka TV sets, watched at least the first 5 minutes of Justice League in its opening weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Wonder Woman, 2.1 million viewers, households, watched Wonder Woman 1984 in its opening weekend. For Disney, 1.7 million for WandaVision and 1.7 as well, or 1.8 for Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
For the first episode.
For the first episode. So long story short, it beat both WandaVision and Falcon its opening weekend.
That's impressive.
And just to go back to the epilogue that has, you know, because Zack Snyder said, I may not get another chance to do this, so I want Jared Leto and Batman together. What'd you think of that epilogue?
It was meaningless. It was totally meaningless.
Did you feel like bit excited of like, I want to see what happens?
Yeah, but it goes back to the Batman versus Superman scene where Bruce is sleeping and he has this dream of the future where it's Superman is a villain, or maybe it's not Superman, maybe it's an evil version of Superman, whatever. And why he has the same dream? And why would Zack Snyder feel to put this in if they're not going to do something about it?
Because Zack Snyder says, this is potentially my last shot. I want Joker and Batman together. And audiences, if you want more, this is what you could get. You could get something with more with Joker and Batman in this version, which, honestly, like, why not? I mean, I know it means, like, a lot, but you have all those characters in the dream version together.
Right, and then he had the other epilogue where the where
Bruce Wayne wakes up and finds that one's a different story. Okay, minor spoilers.
Well, I don't want to spoil the epilogues. Let's move on.
As I said, this version of the film was made 5 years ago, supposed to be released November 2017. Do you think that a 2-hour, 50-minute version of this film would have worked in theaters? People would have said, yes, this is great.
Yes.
Yeah.
There were a lot of scenes that were drawn out that could have been cut. There were scenes that definitely weren't needed that could have been cut. I think it definitely could have worked as a 2-hour and 50-minute movie.
Now, this version's 4 hours. Would you have been fine sitting in the theater for 4 hours, which Zack Snyder has an IMAX cut with an intermission? Would you be fine saying, yes, let's go see this in theaters for 4 hours?
Yeah, what the heck, one day out of your life.
In like 70mm IMAX.
In the winter or something, or yeah.
And who or what would you say is the star of this film?
Wow. Who or what is the star? I mean, each of the members of the Justice League really had their... That's very hard. I don't know. I guess I would say it wasn't Gal. I don't think Gal...
Did this film kind of make up Wonder Woman 1984 for you in your mind with Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman?
Yes, it did. But I felt like after a certain point, she wasn't as important. Like, she didn't have any good lines or any good scenes. I mean, she had some scenes in the final battle, but I thought her character, like, dipped a little bit in this movie. I would say the star of the movie, to me... is Alfred. I like that.
Really?
I loved Alfred.
I do love Jeremy Irons' scenes as Alfred. I just can't believe they cut those scenes. I wanna be taught how to make tea from Alfred. That's the stuff I need in my life. For me, I say Zack Snyder's the star of this. Everyone's been on his back for so many years criticizing him, and now because of this, and in a weird way, a redemption for him, he's finally... hopefully at peace with himself, and his family can be at peace. And his name's in the frickin' title. Zack Snyder's Justice League is the official title. So for me, he's a star.
I just feel like he has to learn to be better.
I think aspect?
He has to edit better, and he can't let these scenes, you know, because the scenes drag out and they're not interesting. And he has to stop with the, like, these, I don't know.
Slow motion?
Yeah. I mean, he tries really hard. I just feel like just have to be a little more punchier. I don't know.
And what would you give this on the nut scale? Would you give this an almond, a walnut, a cashew, or the almighty peanut?
I give it a cashew. I enjoyed watching it. Yeah. You know, even though I know most of the storyline, I thought it was intriguing. You know, I like superhero movies, and I thought it deserved that level.
I also give this a cashew. I know that, like, I've been telling you for many years, like, I've been hyping this up, like, saying that it exists, mm-hmm. and that my theories were eventually validated. And in a certain way of saying, like, this is, because if I ever question, like, does this need to be in the film, as you're saying, with extended scenes of Icelandic women singing and then sniffing Aquaman's jacket, does it need to be in it? No. But this is Zack Snyder's Justice League. He's going to put whatever the hell he wants. And that's kind of what we've been rooting for. That's kind of the fun of, like, this is unfiltered Zack. So in that way, it's like Peanut, but at its core, yes, the film is long. I think that the first 2 hours could definitely be cut up if, like, they were planning on, like, an official release. Because Flash doesn't get introduced to over an hour in the film. Mm-hmm. I think that's just an issue to start off on editing. And, yeah, not all the dialogue's great, but I think it's definitely improvement over 2017. And if you're a fan of artistic integrity, I would recommend this film. So I still give it a cashew. And also, a lot of the hype, and even in the film, there was an advertisement for AFSP, American Foundation of Suicide Prevention. I donated a ticket's worth for that, because for Autumn Snyder's page or whatever. If you want to as well, I'll put a link in the description. I think it's really important, and it'll help a lot of people. Now that we have that out of the way, Dad, it's time to do our list of the week, in which we are ranking our top 7 3-hour-plus long films. As we mentioned, Zack Snyder's Justice League was 4 hours, and 3 hours is still a rarity for theaters. Did you have any rules for this list?
3 hours, 180 minutes. That was my only rule.
My rule was, as you said, 180 minutes, but I include some director's cuts, because some director's cuts or extended versions are less than 3 hours in theaters, mm-hmm. but then on home video, they can be above 180 minutes. So that is where there's some leeway for this list. Dad, what do you have for number 7 of 3 hour plus long films?
Okay, my number 7. Now, I'm going to be really dating myself with this list, because I'm going back a ways. My number 7 is It's a Mad, 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 Mad World from 1963. It is the precursor to Rat Race, where it's one of these movies where it's starring a whole bunch of people looking for a treasure. And so there's Spencer Tracy, Milton Berle, Sid Caesar, Buddy Hackett, Ethel Merman, Mickey Rooney, Phil Silvers, Jonathan Winters, Edie Adams, Jimmy Durante, and they're all looking for the big W. If you've seen the movie, you know what I mean. Really funny. I used to watch it, like, on the weekends on TV at home, you know, when at home, or during the week on the Channel 7 movie at 4:30 or whatever it was. Really fun movie. Maybe it's probably too long. It's 210 minutes, which is, you know.
That's 3.5 hours.
I know, which is long for a comedy, but I really loved it. I laughed a lot. And that's my number 7.
I remember when I was a kid, probably less than 10, I watched it and I really enjoyed the concepts, and I think I enjoyed it. I don't remember it being 3.5 hours.
Yeah,
that's
so
very long. Up for me at number 7, I got Dr. Sleep, the 2019 Mike Flanagan sequel to The Shining. And this is the director's cut version. The original version was 2.5. This is like just over 3 hours. And the movie itself, it's a bit weird that it's a Shining sequel, but things I love, Ewan McGregor as Danny. He's great. Rebecca Ferguson as Rose the Hat. Love Rebecca Ferguson so much. And Mike Flanagan, the director. I love his style. I think he's
what
great.
What else has he done?
He did Ouija, Origin of Evil, the good Ouija film. Mm-hmm. He did two of the Haunting on Hill House, like some Netflix shows. I really, if like Mike Flanagan's doing a horror film, I'm so hyped for it. And there are some great like recreation films using scenes from The Shining that they had to get actors for that look really cool. And it's fun going back to the hotel. This version, as well as the normal one, it just feels long. Like, no matter what, this film feels long, but I wanted to put this in my list because I've been holding it off from a couple other lists. Didn't do very well financially. $31 million domestically, $72 million worldwide, my number 7, Dr. Sleep.
Yeah, I think I remember seeing the end of it.
Yeah.
I never saw The Shining, really, and I never really saw Dr. Sleep, so I can't really comment on either of these two. Sorry. All right, on to my number 6, Spartacus from 1960, directed by Stanley Kubrick. The famous Stanley Kubrick.
I didn't know he did Spartacus.
Yeah. Starring Kirk Douglas, Laurence Olivier, Peter Ustinov, Tony Curtis, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, it's part of this genre of the early, the mid-50s to the early 60s of all these big, long movies. And a lot of my movies that I've selected are in this genre, this period of time. But this was great. Classic, you know, story, sort of like Gladiator in a way. Slave turns into this, like, leads a revolt of the slaves, you know. Great movie. Great performance by Kirk Douglas. That is my number six, Spartacus.
I've not seen it. I definitely know of its importance. The only thing I can say is that I am Spartacus. For me, at number six, it's probably on your list. A lot of people, especially Jeremy, my brother, will be disappointed it's so low on mine, but it is The Godfather Part Two. I finally watched this over the winter. It's good. I just don't understand everyone's love for The Godfather. I felt it was a bit long at 3.5 hours. The things I do like, I like seeing the duality of Michael and Vito at the same age and doing the same things in their lives and how, you know, each storyline goes about. And you got Al Pacino, Robert De Niro. Like, I can't complain about it. I just can't remember anything that happens in that movie. Granted, I've only seen it once. And it only grossed $57.3 million domestically in its initial run in 1974. I do not believe it was released internationally. It was old. It's an older film. It's very hard to find data on that type. But number six, Godfather Part Two.
Well, I will discuss that later, as it is on my list. It's too bad the original Godfather wasn't over 3 hours, because that definitely would have been the list. All right, my number five is Gandhi, which is the movie from 1982, directed by Richard Attenborough, starring Ben Kingsley, introducing Ben Kingsley as Gandhi, his first. And I bet you, if they did that nowadays and tried to make a British guy play an Indian guy, would not go over well. But I just remember, you know, I've only seen it once, but it won Best Picture that year. And really should watch it again now that I've, you know, because I do a lot of business in India, and I've traveled to Mumbai and a couple times. So I've gotten involved with the Indian culture and things of that nature. So probably should rewatch it. But great performance, great movie, great story. Kind of a shame that a nonviolence person who preaches nonviolence would die by violence. But I guess that's Martin Luther King as well. So my number five, Gandhi.
I've not seen this one also. I'm 0 for 3 on your list, but I know about it. At least I can say that. But, you know, just another one of those big, long films that are important that I just have not had the time or real desire to see, sadly.
Well, you've had the time. You just haven't had the desire.
I've definitely had the time. Up for me at number five, we got 2005's King Kong. This is directed by Peter Jackson right after Lord of the Rings, starring Jack Black, Naomi Watts, Adrian Brody, and Andy Serkis as King Kong. This is 3 hours and 7 minutes. There is actually a director's cut that's 3 hours and 20 minutes. It's a long film. I remember, though, when I saw this when I was 7, we saw this for your birthday, I think, in the city. I don't remember much of the first hour before they get to the island, but I remember a lot of Skull Island. I really like Skull Island. And 15 years later, I've watched a good portion of Skull Island, but especially the ending on TV. The visuals hold up great for a movie from 2005. I'm still really shocked of how great it looks. The action, great. Love the dinosaur fights. The New York scenes, whether it's up on the Empire State Building or in Times Square with the set designs. I like it. It's cool. Not everyone's cup of tea. $218 million domestically, $550 worldwide. I'm a fan of King Kong.
You know, in the whole King Kong, Godzilla, Rodan universe, King Kong was always my favorite as well. So I made the big mistake of going to this movie for my birthday and bringing the whole family, including my daughter, who was not happy that we were at this movie. I think my wife wasn't happy either because, the scenes on Skull Island with the bugs and the things. And I have to say, I've seen the King Kong, the original King Kong from 1931. I've seen the version with Jessica Lange where he ends up at the top of the World Trade Center. And I've seen this one. And I really like the original one better. I don't know. It's so campy. But this was too drawn out. It was like Peter Jackson just like wouldn't cut this movie. It really annoyed me.
If I rewatch it, I would probably think this is way too long. Probably something like Justice League, but yeah. I haven't. So I still have that fresh idea in my brain of this is enjoyable.
Yeah. The problem I have is that basically, since I've seen the original so many times, it basically stuck to the same premise as the original one.
Yeah.
So it really didn't do as much for me. I was looking for something. There was some storyline changes and things like that. But, Jack Black's character I thought was a little bit different. But, you know, Peter Jackson's very talented. He's just, you know, I'll talk about him later.
Same.
All right. My number four is Peter Jackson, Lord of the Rings, Return of the King.
Nice.
Okay, so this is the one that won Best Picture.
Yes.
So I think whether it's like the best of the three movies, hard to say. It was more of like congratulation to him for just doing a ridiculously great job in putting these movies together and basically putting New Zealand on the map as being a place to visit. And because really, everything's filmed in New Zealand, outside, in the mountains of the South Island and stuff like that. And it's just, it's beautiful country. So this was the conclusion. I always like movies that conclude. I don't like Back to Future 2, you know. Yeah. I like movies that end. And this ends the story. And, you know, that's why I liked it the most. And so it's my number four. And I won Best Picture as well. So
where were you the first time you saw this? Were you, did you see it with Jeremy? Were we in Florida when you saw this?
I have no idea. When did
Because I don't remember you ever even seeing or talking about Lord of the Rings before this.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen all three. I think I saw The Two Towers with Mom, and that one, I think, what? Just lasted forever, I think. Yeah, I don't talk about it. I have never, like, I wouldn't say, God, I wish I could rewatch it. All the three Lord of the Rings movies, and I haven't seen the prequels and stuff like that, which I probably should do on a plane or something, but
yeah, I'm not a big fan of those.
That is my number four.
Well, I do enjoy the Lord of the Rings movies, and we'll probably talk about it later. For me, at number four, we got a film that is probably one of the inspirations for this episode I've talked about before, and it's Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice. And this is the director's cut, aka the Ultimate Edition, aka the definitive version. As I mentioned before, the theatrical cut was 2.5 hours. They cut out 30 minutes of essential plot elements, and in the director's cut, it is 3 hours and 2 minutes. So it counts. I've discussed it before, so I'm not going to go that much into detail. What I will say is that I watched this a week before Justice League came out, and I was really impressed with how quickly the 3 hours flow by. I love that the first 2 hours is a great 2-hour political mystery in a way, especially with Lois trying to figure out what's happened in Africa. I love that element. And then the last hour is a superhero film, Batman v Superman fight. Wonder Woman joins, and then Doomsday happens. And what I love is that when I started the film, I felt like this is the beginning of an epic. Like, I am fully in on this 3-hour journey, and I love it. But as I said, these numbers don't seem bad. 330 million domestically, 872 million worldwide.
That's pretty good.
But given the budget and given the opening weekend, it's not good. It didn't make 2 times its opening weekend, which usually never happens.
Hmm.
Like, it really did not do well financially. But number four. BVS.
I liked Batman vs. Superman. I thought it was the best of all the Zack Snyder movies. I think we had it on our DC list as well.
Yes, we did.
You know, I loved the Wonder Woman introduction because I didn't know it was coming. And that was really cool. And the Wonder Woman music is awesome.
Well, Dad, now that we are halfway through our list, I think we're going to be taking a quick break to hear a word from our sponsor, Anchor. So we're going to be taking a quick break, and then we'll get right back to the list. Welcome back to the show, everybody. I am joined by Jeff Bergman. We just reviewed Zack Snyder's Justice League, which is currently on HBO Max, and we're in the middle of our top 7 3-hour-plus long films. We're at number 3. Jeff, what do you have?
I'm going with The Godfather Part 2, and when I watch the movie, I really like the Al Pacino parts versus the Vito parts.
Yeah.
The Vito parts, you know, it's a nice story. It'd be a nice prequel. How he became Vito Corleone and how he met Clemenza and Tessio and stuff like that. That was nice. But the meat of the story was the Al Pacino, I mean, and then the evil and the backstabbing and the double crossing, who tried to kill Michael and all that stuff. And I always keep forgetting who actually did it. To this day, I always forget who tried to kill Michael in his house.
Well, I mean,
you know, and I like the fact that, it involved the whole, the Meyer Lansky, the Jewish mafia character into this, and the Cubans. I think that movie would have been a great movie just on its own, and I wish that's what The Godfather Part 2 was. I really didn't need the prequel, but I really should probably read the Godfather book to see what's in that and how much of this Coppola made up and how much was actually in the book or whatever.
Could be a nice summer read.
Yeah, but I really like the Al Pacino story of The Godfather Part 2. That was really fun.
As I said, it's good. There's so much hype. I think the hype ruined The Godfathers for me. Up for me at number 3, I'm afraid that we're getting too similar with our lists now in the top 3, but it is Titanic. This is directed by James Cameron, starring Leonardo DiCaprio, Kate Winslet, and Billy Zane, and it's part romance, part disaster epic, and I love a good disaster film if it takes up half of a film, which on its own is the length of a normal film. The film is 3 hours and 15 minutes. It is long, and as I said, I love the second half with the sinking of the Titanic. If it's on TV, odds are I'd watch it. I really love that part. And the music, My Heart Will Go On. The film was very big at the time, right before I was born, into when I was born. Like, it had very long longevity. I'd say it's a classic to this day. 659 million domestically, 2.2 billion worldwide, including a 3D re-release. My number three, Titanic.
So I didn't put it on the list.
Interesting.
Because before they got into the story, Bill Paxton, RIP, his whole character, just that whole script, the way it was written, it was too contrived. I didn't like it.
It was a setup to the real story.
I know, but it was... It just bothered me. And so, I mean, listen, it was beautifully shot the way they did it. I know they filmed it in Mexico on a water soundstage or something like that. I mean, it's pretty amazing how he shot it, you know, from a special effects point of view at that time. It was pretty advanced. And it's really like a horror movie almost, because once they hit the iceberg, it's like the ship is the killer.
Yeah.
Or the water's the killer and everybody dies, you know? So I think I remember enjoying it. I mean, I'm not a big disaster movie guy, but that's why I didn't make my list. But I could see how it made yours.
I just also remember, reading, I don't remember because I wasn't alive, but reading, like, no one thought this would do well. People thought it was going to bomb in summer of 97 before it was delayed. And no one thought it was going to be... any well received, and then it became Oscars and the biggest film of all time for 10 plus years, which is just crazy. So yeah, number three, Titanic.
All right, my number two movie is The Ten Commandments, directed by the famous Cecil B. DeMille, who has a Oscar, the DeMille Award, named after him. He's so popular. But The Ten Commandments from 1956, Charlton Heston, one of the greatest actors, one of my favorite actors of all time. And it's one of these things, it's on every year in April, and I would always, a kid, watch it, no matter what. And for some reason, I could never stay up for the Ten Commandments scene. Like, I'd make it to Exodus, and then I would fall asleep or something, and I never could make it to the part where he actually gets the Ten Commandments.
Have you made it to that point?
Yes, I have seen it.
All right.
But I mean, at the time, the special effects in 56 of all the miracles, the burning bush, the parting of the Red Sea especially, you know, you go to the Universal Studios and they part the Red Sea for you, but it's, I don't know if it's the same place or what they did. So the special effects were ahead of its time. And I know they've done other versions of this. They did the cartoon version.
Prince of Egypt.
And I think they did the...
Ridley Scott did Exodus, Gods and Kings.
Yeah. The story's been told many times. And I know it's Passover coming up, so it's very apropos.
Get your Ten Commandment film VHSs ready.
But I still haven't figured out how they couldn't figure out. All right. So they find a baby in the river, right? So the woman's got to say to herself, why would there be a baby in the river? Oh, yeah. My father just decreed that all firstborn babies are going to need to die. So this person's trying to, so it's a Jewish kid. It seems pretty obvious to me.
I never thought of it like that.
Maybe, you know, she just was desperate for a child, so she wanted something.
Well, I know it's Passover, but I will admit I've never seen the Ten Commandments. I've definitely seen a segment before a commercial break.
Right.
But I've never seen it because it's long. How long is it?
It is 220.
Yeah, that's 2 hours, 3 hours and 40 minutes. That's almost 4 hours. I have not had the bandwidth. I have not mentally readied myself for that.
Oh, and the death of the firstborn, you know, that was good special effects.
You know, as you said, it is Passover. I do have time on my hands trying to knock a lot of things off my bucket list. I could watch it. Up for me at number two, I'm guessing you're going to talk about this one, but is Avengers Endgame. As we know, it is directed by the Russo brothers, a culmination of a 10-year franchise off of one of the greatest cliffhangers of Thanos snapping away half of humanity. 3 hours and 2 minutes. And I'll admit, it goes by very quickly. If you say, oh, we're watching Endgame, I'll be like, yes, not even thinking that it's going to be 3 hours. Because I love that the film feels like it's split up into three different sections of a prologue / aftermath. For the first hour, the second hour is the time travel section, and the third section is the finale and conclusion. And as you said with Return of the King, I love a good conclusion. The only reason why it's not number one is because Marvel, like what Jeremy, my brother, says a lot, is that there's no real start. You said you don't like movies that end. I don't like movies that don't really start and have, like, character setups. I know it's Marvel. The character setups are in the previous films. But as a film on its own, it doesn't have its own setup. So that's why it's not number one, but I still, it's Endgame, it's great. 858 million domestically, 2.8 billion worldwide. So my number two, Avengers Endgame.
Well, what's there left to say? The end scene where everybody comes back. It's like one of the greatest scenes in movie history. The only thing is, when I was looking at lists of movies, is this didn't show up as being 180 minutes.
Really?
So I did not put it on my list.
Oh my God. Yeah. 182 minutes. I remember.
I think, I don't know the list I had it. It wasn't over 180.
I remember when the tickets came out, they're like 3 hours and 2 minutes. Me and my friends are like, no way it's that long. But yeah. But also that goes to your point. It doesn't feel like 3 hours or close because with credits, but still. Number two, Avengers Endgame.
Great flick. And I do recommend, if you have the time, watch all 21 Marvel movies in order of release. Don't watch them in order of what year it took place in, because then it screws up the epilogues. And then it builds up to Avengers Endgame, and it's great.
Worth it.
It's worth it.
All right, so before we get to our number one, Dad, what were just some films that just didn't make your list?
Well, a lot of these movies didn't make my list. They probably would have normally, but we've talked about them before. So, like, The Right Stuff, Dances with Wolves, Titanic, you mentioned JFK, Ben-Hur. I kind of had it in the same class as The Ten Commandments, even though Ben-Hur won a ton of Oscars. I didn't like it as much as Ten Commandments. Gone with the Wind, of course.
Yeah.
But any movie that, I don't know, involves the South and slavery, I try to stay away from. Deer Hunter, also won Best Picture. Never really liked that movie, though. The Russian roulette scenes in that movie are the most intense scenes I've ever seen in my life. And The Irishman, which came out last year, which was enjoyable. Not great, but it was enjoyable. Those are my almost made it.
For me, I was really lucky because I think looking at the list, there are only, I guess, 10 because of it's a mad, mad, mad world. There are only, besides that, there are only 9 3-hour-long films I've seen. So I'm really lucky I got this. So as you said, The Irishman, which we both separately were able to see this in theaters, sat through the 3.5-hour-long film. It's long. Like, I was drifting off in my mind, not falling asleep, but I was somewhere else during that. And then my other one, which might be your number one, is Wolf of Wall Street, which, like a lot of people said, is because there were some reports that, like, it's 3 hours, but then others are, it's 2 hours and 59 minutes, 1 minute under 180. And I'm like, well, it doesn't count, but, like, it's really close. And I couldn't get the exact runtime down to the second, so I didn't choose it. But also not that big on Wolf of Wall Street. So those are my only two.
Wolf of Wall Street was fun to watch, but it was too much after a while.
Well, I'm very interested. What is your number one 3-hour-long movie?
My number one 3-hour-long movie is Schindler's List.
All right.
It's just such an important movie, mainly because it was really the first movie. I know they've done it in some TV things, but it was really the first movie that really showed kind of the horrors of the concentration camps. I know that it's been in Sophie's Choice and other films, but it was really the first one that to the masses, you know, especially the scene in the shower in the gas chamber where, you know, the women are naked and they're, you know, they don't know what's happening and the shower's about to go off and then it's miraculously never happens. But I just think it's an important movie for everyone to see. And it was really well done. It was like an homage by Steven Spielberg to Jewish people, I guess, because his parents were survivors, or I believe, or his parents, grandpa, I'm not sure which one. And I guess growing up in Arizona, you know, he probably dealt with a lot of people who didn't believe, you know? So he felt it was an important movie to make, and I'm glad I saw it. And so it's my number one. One Best Picture.
I can't say the same that I've seen it, though. There's been a lot of moments where I'm like, oh, let's watch Schindler's List, like back in high school.
Yeah.
And mom's like, that's like a serious movie. You want to watch that now? And I'm like, well, I guess not. And I've never come around to watching it. I want to.
It's a good rainy day movie to sit where you have nothing, you have an afternoon to kill or something like that.
I just know, thanks to Seinfeld, never make out during Schindler's List. Where were you the first time you saw Schindler's List?
Was it with mom? Yeah, we were in a theater, you know. I had to be mentally prepared to watch that movie. I remember I had to see it in the daytime because I couldn't see it at night because I wouldn't be able to go to sleep. So
one of these days I will definitely, it's one of the films I like really want to watch. But for me at number,
we should have like a Best Picture thing where like we try to watch every Best Picture that ever was made.
It's a good task. You got 88.
You should
times.
Go backwards because you don't want to start with your really weird ones like The Jazz Singer and Cimarron or whatever.
Wings.
Yeah, Wings. You want to go backwards. And then when they get too weird or corny, then you stop.
Up for me at number one is, you mentioned already, Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King. This is Peter Jackson. This is the epic finale. And as we mentioned before, I love a good finale. And I will dedicate this entry to Colin, my LA roommate. He was obsessed. He is obsessed with Lord of the Ring, dedicates a lot of his time to it. He watches the trilogy once a month. Still to this day, I believe.
Really?
Yeah, all three films. He loves
it. Not the prequels.
Not the prequels.
Okay.
But I love that while it is a trilogy finale, it still feels like an independent film on its own with, you remember when the character's Pippin, he creates a catalyst of events causing the villain to hunt them down, which makes it its own.
I have no memory of the movie.
She saw it 18 years ago.
Yeah.
But because of that, it felt like it's its own movie with its own conflict. And that's what I look for in a film franchise, in a finale like this, something that still stands on its own. 18 years, visuals still look great. Great mix of practical and visual CGI. And kind of like Justice League, the ending goes a bit too long, in which you have one ending and you think it's done, but then there's another ending and another ending. But the reason why it's number one over Endgame is the pace, I think, is phenomenal. This is a 3-hour and 20-long-minute movie. The first time I watched it, Sally was not with Colin because we ran out of time, but was with my roommates at school. And when we watched it, we were 2 hours in and I was checking the time. I thought it was 1 hour. 2 hours went by like that. And I'm like, oh my God, we only have like 1 hour 20 left of this film.
Cause he had to finish, he had to get it all in.
He had to get it all in. But I'm just like, the pace, I felt like this is what you should do with a 3 hour movie, not make it feel 3 hours. It is wonderfully made, very fast paced, very action packed in a sense. And yeah, is it best picture worthy? I only say it's best picture worthy, but as an achievement of film and the trilogy and Peter Jackson himself, very much worthy. $378 million domestically, $1.1 billion worldwide. My number one, Lord of the Rings, Return of the King. It took me 22 years to watch this trilogy, and worth it.
Wow.
Yeah. I saw The Hobbits before Lord of the Rings.
Oh.
And I'll say it makes The Hobbits, one, look worse, but two, makes me understand them a lot more.
So you think if I had to watch the series again, I should start with The Hobbit?
No. I would say, because like, you know, like in Captain Marvel, to go back to Marvel, like Phil Coulson is in the film. Yeah. Like if you didn't see Avengers or stuff like that, you would be like, who is this guy? But then when you watch The Hobbits after Lord of the Rings, you'd be like, oh, I can't remember anyone's name in that franchise, but like, oh, Bingo is there, or something like that. So like, it makes it more, I guess you would be ending on a worser note, but still, I like that, you know, for fans of Middle-earth, you have your 6-film franchise, and apparently Amazon is almost in production on a TV series for The Lord of the Rings, doing it all over again. Number one, 3-hour-long film, Return of the King.
Good way to end it. But I just want to give a little RIP to George Segal and Jessica Walter, both passed away this week. Liked them both. Thought they were very funny people.
Two great TV comedians, and more apparently. I know them from the Goldbergs and Arrested Development.
Yeah, I know. George Segal did a lot of important movies in the 70s. The Hot Rocks is one of my favorite movies. It's a good caper movie, and I hope they remake it one of these days.
But yeah, that is our top 7 3-hour-long films, as well as Zack Snyder's Justice League. I really just can't believe that the film is out after all this time.
I think this might be our Zack Snyder Justice League longest episode.
Oh yeah, I think this is this episode is so long because we dedicated it to Zack Snyder and his use of slow-mo. But Dad, once again, thank you so much for joining me on this episode today. I had a blast talking with you for technically, this is my birthday episode. We're filming right before my birthday, and then it's being released the day after my birthday. So happy birthday.
Cumpleaños feliz.
Thank you. And audiences, if you don't know, you can actually support the show Mr. Movie on anchor.fm/Joshua-Bergman/support. You can donate $10, $5, or just $1 a month. Anything would mean the absolute world to us. Dad, once again, thank you so much for joining me. And audiences, thank you so much for listening, and we hope you tune in next time.